The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Our God speaks. We're privileged to have a God who has spoken, who still speaks. And God's people are like unto God in that they also speak. And they can speak. And they have something to say. There's a fascinating passage in the Bible that talks about the idols that are made with men's hands. It says they set up an idol, and they have ears, but they do not hear. They have eyes, but they do not see. And they have mouths, but they do not speak. And then it goes on to say that those who make them are like unto them. They also have eyes that do not see, ears that do not hear, and mouths that do not speak. Jesus, when he was here, said, having eyes, don't you see? Having ears, don't you hear? And it's wonderful that with the presence of God and with Jesus in our hearts, we can speak. We can have something to say and actually have something to give, something that is Christ's to give. If you ever stand in front of a classroom, you know that students expect you to have something to say. In fact, I said that one time this year. One morning, I was in front of the room. The bell rang. Students got quiet. I stood there a bit. I said, I suppose you expect me to say something, don't you? Well, they acknowledged it. They did. They really expected something to happen. We need to have something to say. Our topic is teacher literacy. There's a passage in the Bible that says that men are ever learning, some men anyway, ever learning, but never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. But it is possible to be ever learning and to come to the knowledge of the truth. The question that might face us is it possible to, quote, arrive, to be in a position where we are literate, where we are ready to teach? How do we know when we're there? If we're going to hire somebody for the classroom, how do we know that this person is literate enough to do the job? What do we look for? What are the factors that are involved here? I'd like to suggest a number of things. When we talk about literacy, literacy has to do with letters, with words, with language, with speech, primarily when we think of literate, we're thinking of letters and learning, speech and language. And we can think of literacy as being the foundation upon which we stand, out of which we work. It's a foundation. It's the body of content. There has to be a certain amount of content that we know in order for us to be able to give, in order for us to be able to answer questions, in order for us to be able to share. We have to have something to share. We have to have some understanding. It's significant that God spoke, and He still speaks. And He also wrote. He wrote, we understand, with His finger. He wrote some commandments. And when God speaks, His words have content. There's something to them. There's substance. And there's power in words. A word is, in a sense, we know that Jesus Christ Himself was the Word, the living Word. And there's also a sense in which the words that we speak have life in them, can have life. One poet said, a word is dead when it is said, some say. I say, it just begins to live that day. We all know that we can think back to, in our past, to the time when people said words. And some of those words stick in our minds. It could be a word of encouragement. Can be a word of discouragement. But it does matter what we say. There are a number of factors for us to look at when we consider being literate as a teacher. It's a basis from which we operate. One of the things as a teacher, and if you're looking to hire a teacher, one of the things we want to look for is a person who is aware, a person who has eyes that see. There's a difference between looking at and observing. We aren't all Isaac Newtons, but I don't know how many people saw an apple fall from a tree before Isaac did. But when he saw the apple fall from the tree, why, he thought. And he put a connection between that and the forces that hold the moon in orbit around the earth. Now, a teacher is one who sees, who applies his heart to understanding, who thinks about things that he sees. He ponders over things that he hears. We read that Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. Now, if we want our students to ponder, if we want them to think, if we want them to think about the things they see, want them to observe, we need to be doing the same thing as teachers. So we want to cultivate just an awareness of things around us, whether it's birds, the bird song, whether it's the stars, whether it's our friends and interactions with our friends. A teacher is one who lives with his eyes open, with his ears open, with his heart pondering. He's awake. He's engaged. He's aware. Another area is perspective. Seeing things rightly. Seeing things rightly. Well, in one sense, you could say there are as many ways to look at things as there are people looking. Well, there's a sense in which that's true because we are individuals. However, primarily, we need to see Jesus, we need to see God, and if we see the world as created by God and also as under the control and the care of God, and if we see the interactions of things, whether it's nature, interactions in the physical world, all these things as being under God's control, and if we see the laws as God's laws that make things operate, we have a perspective that provides integration. And it's more important for us to see God rightly, Christ rightly, actually, than it is for us to see ourselves rightly. It's only as we see Him that we can then come to an understanding of ourselves. And so obviously we must be thoroughly Christian in our understanding of God and His world and His word, ourselves, our friends. We need to look at things in a Christian perspective. Another area of literacy is having proper relationships. Relationships. This is really the heart of living. And to relate properly to how do I fit into this world? Who am I and what shall I do? Both in and out of school. The teacher teaches out of his life. He has no choice but to teach out of his life. Much of what we teach, much of what the influence we have on our students will be because of who we are and of the relationships we have with the people around us and with the things we own and with the things we possess. What is my relationship with my material possessions, with my money, with my friends, with my home, with my pets, with whatever I have? Do I have proper, healthy relationships? And then relationships with authorities over us, with other teachers. We need to cultivate these kinds of relationships. This is a very critical area. If we expect students to learn to relate with one another, to grow up relating properly to one another and to seeing how they fit into their families and into the world, we ourselves must have healthy relationships. Another area of literacy would be knowledge itself. Knowledge includes information. It also includes experience, the experiences that we have had. And so obviously as a teacher, it's helpful to have a certain amount of experience in simply living. The more experience we have in a sense, the more of a foundation we have, although we need to be learning and be aware. I've heard one person say that some people have 1 year experience, some people have 20 years experience. Just because a person has taught 20 years does not mean he has 20 years of experience. He might only have 1 year of experience repeated 20 times. And so we really need to grow. And so we can't, don't be fooled by someone's lack of years or someone's accumulation of years. It's what happened in those years, and it's the growing that counts. If we do not have the awareness and or we are not growing in knowledge, why additional years themselves can actually develop a rut rather than equip us further. Going on, these things are somewhat related. I'll just touch them quickly. Related to knowledge, but in a different focus, is understanding. A teacher needs to have understanding, which suggests more having insights. Having insights. What's the significance? What's the meaning of what we know? Knowledge itself is a bit more than information. It's tempered with having experienced things. But then understanding is a growth in knowledge, having insights, knowing the significance. Well, so what? If volcanoes do happen, what does that have to do with anything? Well, as we look at the world, as we study, as we teach, as we learn about God's world and the facts of the various skills we learn in school, we need to see that these things are significant. They are all part of our understanding, His world, and being equipped for service. And then wisdom, we need a degree of wisdom, which is one definition is how to use. So we have the knowledge, so we understand. Now, what can I do with this? Or how does it fit into life? And last of all, virtue. It's interesting that virtue is sometimes used more in the case of, we think of a virtuous woman. It also, there's a virtuous man. Sometimes the word integrity is used more. But someone has said that wisdom is knowing how to apply things, but then virtue is actually doing it. Do we actually operate? Do we function? Do we put into practice the things that we have? We can have an awareness. We can have the right perspective. We can have knowledge. We can understand. We can even see how things could be applied. But if we don't do it, if we don't actually live in it, we're not really people of integrity. We're not really virtuous. These are some areas that we want to look at ourselves as we grow, as young people, as we consider stepping into the classroom, taking the responsibility of teaching. These are areas to look at. Do I love life? Do I love learning? Do I enjoy being alive? Do I enjoy being around people? Do I have this kind of awareness? Do I really see things through the eyes of the Master? Do I look at things the way Jesus would look at them? And obviously, I need to be in Christ first. But one of the struggles is to, there are Christians who are teachers, and then there are Christian teachers. And we tend to teach the way we are taught. And it's a struggle. If we go through a school and we're not taught from a Christian perspective, and then we ourselves go in the classroom, we pretty much teach the way we were taught. And it's so easy to have, over here is the world of God and the Bible and Christianity and the Lord living in my heart. And then over here is the world of facts and information and understanding and skills. And how do these things have anything to do with each other? Well, this is where we need to develop perspective, and it's a whole question of integration and teaching, which is another topic to develop. But suffice to say that as we live, in Christ and through Christ, we can see that really everything, all the skills we develop are skills that He has given. The whole world we study is the world that He has made. The cattle are His, the birds are His, the air is His, the laws of physics are His, the laws of mathematics are His. The languages that have been developed are languages, a gift of God. And we are really studying His world. So what happens here is as we look for teachers and as we teach, we want to see a healthy level of development of these areas. And it's so true that we teach out of our lives. We really have no other choice. We out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So whatever's in the heart will come out. If our heart is turned to our students, we will want to teach them. We will want to help them. We will want to help them develop their skills. If our heart is really in something else, I'd rather be doing this, but I am assigned to do this, well, it just won't work so well. And so as we look at teaching, we have to have our heart in the work. We need to look for people who have the heart in the work. The first law of teaching is that the teacher must know that which he would teach. And so we need to ourselves love knowledge, love learning, and be able to have something to offer, something to give. Obviously, whatever we have to give is a gift from God. We can do no good thing ourselves. It's interesting that there's a passage in Scripture where Jesus was walking along and someone touched him and he felt virtue going out. Jesus actually had something to give. Now, when we teach, we also have an experience of that nature. You can tell when you're speaking if the class, if the group is in has a heart to receive, they can actually receive something, and sometimes the Lord gives something. And if you teach a while, you may have the experience sooner or later, probably sooner, of standing up some morning and maybe it's time for devotion and you wanted to want out, what do I have to give? You can always read some scripture, you can always sing a song, but sometimes we maybe in some morning there just isn't that little thought, that thought to give. The point is that we have something to offer. Peter and John, I believe it was, when they walked in the temple or in the court of the temple one day, saw a lame man there. And they said to him, "Look on us." And he did. And they were able to heal him. Now, they didn't have silver or gold to give. If they did have any, that's not really what he needed. But they knew that they had something to give. And what they had to give was not theirs. It was God's. This is a thing a teacher needs to recognize, too. Anything that a teacher has to give, whether it's an answer to a question, whether it's help with a problem, whether it's encouragement for a discouraged student, whether it's some discipline for a student who needs some, whatever we have to give is not ours. It's God's. That's another thing we need to be aware of, fits in with this awareness, that if I'm going to be able to give anything, it's not going to be my own. If I try to give out of my own, I will get empty very quickly. Teaching is very much like living in a fishbowl. You can be seen from all sides, and your students can easily see all aspects of you. And they can very quickly pick up where you are emotionally and spiritually and intellectually and physically. You need to be willing to be seen and in all those ways. There is a promise that if we believe on the Lord, why out of our belly will flow rivers of living water. Now, that really applies, I believe, to whatever work we're called to. We actually can encourage and give, whether it's giving a product that someone needs, that he needs for life, or in our case as teachers, whether it's It's helping a person develop his skills or understanding. We actually are able to engage the life of the student and help that person grow and understand. Now, I believe that literacy is something that can be achieved, arrived at. We hear the expression sometimes, well, I haven't arrived, or do we ever arrive? And we think, well, no, we're never perfect. There's always more to learn. That's very true. There's always more to learn. But if we can never arrive at a position where we are literate, where we are equipped to teach, we're no better off than the men of the world who are always seeking for something and never find it. They're always striving to get a little more, and they want a little more because they haven't found satisfaction. When they find a little more, whether it's a little more money, a little more power, a little more position, it really doesn't satisfy, but it simply makes them want a little more. Now, with the believer, we always want a little more, but not because we don't find satisfaction. We do find satisfaction in Christ, in His truth, in His Word, and with the Holy Spirit's indwelling, He guides us into all truth and He equips us. But when we are truly living with the and working with the indwelling Christ, He's promised He'll guide us, and that applies to all kinds of work. And so when it comes to the mundane work of how to develop questions to help the children understand this lesson, how to structure our recess activities so that the children would develop their skills of getting along with each other and appreciating one another, whatever the task is at hand, the promise is that He will give us wisdom for that. And so it is possible to arrive there. It is possible to have a proper perspective, the proper perspective. Someone said once, when Jesus was here, someone came and said, "Sir, we would see Jesus." Now, I'm not sure if he knew that Jesus was the Son of God or not, but he knew he wanted to see Jesus. Once we see Jesus rightly, then we do have the proper perspective. We can arrive at the position where we're looking for Jesus, looking at Jesus, where we see Him in His Word, where we see Him in each other, in our fellow teachers, where we see Him in our students, and where we see Him at work. It's possible to have that perspective. We're not talking about amassing a certain amount of knowledge here so that we can get on with teaching. We're talking about developing a proper relationship and perspective, which is then ongoing. Another thing that can be achieved is to have living relationship with God and living relationships with the people around us. And so it's possible to achieve that. Healthy living relationships with our fellow teachers, with our students, with the parents, with the school board, relationships that encourage, that give and take, that will counsel, that will exhort, whatever. And this is an ongoing thing. And without these living relationships, we're going to have great difficulty teaching. Developed skills. Now, this is something that goes on developing, but there is a certain level of skill to develop as teachers, whether it's speaking to a group, whether it's asking questions, whether it's knowing how to answer a student's question in such a way so that he will learn rather than just get an answer to fill in the blank. This is an area that actually takes some hard work. It takes some preparation. This is a major area of teacher preparation. God gives us potential. He gives us abilities, but we do have to work to develop it. and we need some help in developing our skills. But it is possible to develop skills to a level that we can then teach. And that's an ongoing thing. Another area in which it's possible to achieve is to develop habits. Disciplined habits, godly habits. They're very important, very powerful. It's the little foxes that spoil the grace, but it's also the little daily habits that give us great strength as we discipline ourselves to a bit of study, to memorizing scripture, to reading, to counseling with others, whatever. Habits. A teacher needs to be a disciplined person. If we expect our students to be disciplined, we need to be disciplined. And as Paul, keep our body under and have the spirit rule, not the emotions or the feelings rule. In 1 Corinthians, I believe, it talks about charity rejoicing in truth. It's as literacy can be achieved. Another area in which we can look at to see whether we have achieved it is to see if we are continuing to learn. A person who has not developed a habit of continuing to learn really is not ready to teach. Now, we can never read all the books in the world, and we really don't want to. We really don't want to. But we want our students to have a heart for learning. It's not based on a certain amount we want to learn. If we would feel that there's a certain amount to learn and then we're finished and then we've done it, well, that's not really what we want to learn. We've learned the wrong thing. We want to be always experiencing, always learning, and rejoicing in the truth. We are able to come to a knowledge of the truth, and we rejoice in the truth. The new things we learn, it satisfies, but it also stimulates us to learn more. If we learn the wrong kinds of things, it cloys, it satiates. If we learn the right kinds of things, it stimulates. And so, finally, we can get to a position where we are equipped. We are furnished for our work. And if we're furnished, if we're equipped, we will have a certain level of skill which will continue to develop. We will be a learning person, someone who wants to. And teachers are different, by the way. Not every teacher is a reader. Some teachers learn much more by conversation, talking with other people, asking and answering questions like Jesus did. And but regardless of the method, a teacher is a learner, enjoys learning because he rejoices in knowing more and more about God and his world. I'd like to refer to a number of scriptures thinking of saying and speaking. In Genesis, Genesis 1, I'll just refer to the first three words of a number of verses. Verse 3, and God said, let there be light. Verse 6, and God said, let there be a firmament. Verse 9, and God said, let the waters. Verse 11, God said, let the earth bring forth grass. Verse 14, and God said, let there be lights. 20, and God said, let the waters bring forth. 24, and God said, let the earth bring forth. 26, God said, let us make man. And verse 29, God said, behold, I have given you. And then it ends with God saw everything he had made as a result of what he had said. And behold, it was very good. It was very good. It is possible for the things that we work under the help and influence of God to be very good because it's his work. God speaks. And as his children, he wants to equip us to speak. When we speak, something happens. It's fascinating that Every trade, every kind of work has tools to use. And so the carpenter uses his tools, the plumber uses his tools, the electrician uses his appropriate tools. Some years ago that I heard someone make the expression that surprised me, and yet I realized it was true. A teacher's major tools are words. And that's nothing short of miraculous, to think that whether it's written words that students read, or whether it's spoken words, somehow through words there's growth, there's understanding, there's wisdom. Words are important, and there is a literacy. In 1 Kings, Solomon prayed, and he asked for wisdom. Now I'd like to, in 1 Kings 4:29, I'd like to look at one of the results of the answer to that prayer. God equipped Solomon as a result of his prayer for wisdom. God said, well, you have not asked for a long life and the typical things that most people would ask for, so I'll give you wisdom. He also blessed him with many other things. Now, in 1 Kings 4:29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. Now, that's a powerful verse. How Solomon learned this, the Bible doesn't tell us. But look at what he knew. Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the East Country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men, then it names some. His fame was in all the nations round about. He spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spake of trees, from the cedar tree that's in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts, and of fowl, of creeping things, of fishes, and there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth which had heard of his wisdom. Now, I refer to this to point out that here's a person who was given a responsibility as king. God appeared to him in a dream, said, well, what do you ask? And Solomon could have asked for a number of things. We don't read that he asked for, I don't know what he expected to get when he asked for a wise and understanding heart. I'm not sure if he understood what wisdom included. But he asked for wisdom, and God gave him wisdom and largeness of heart. Isn't that a wonderful thing we look for as teachers and as we work with children, to have a largeness of heart that includes all the people that we work with? And as a result, he was a great biology teacher, nature study teacher, and he understood things. Now, I believe Solomon had his eyes open. I believe he looked at things, thought about them. We look, we see, we can observe, but it's God that gives the understanding. It's God that gives the insight. It's God that shows us the significance of what we're looking at. And so, other people could look at the same thing Solomon looked at, but they didn't see what Solomon saw. In the biography of Abe Lincoln by Sandburg, there's one little comment that it says that Abe wanted to know more than his father wanted to know. Let me say that again. Abe wanted to know more than his father wanted to know. Now, some people see something and they see a little something and they're satisfied, the questions are answered. Others see something and they want to know a little more, and they want to know a little more. And if we want to know that properly, it isn't to elevate ourselves, but it's because we recognize that all things around us are God's, and it's a fascinating world, and children themselves have this natural fascination and curiosity with the world about them. It's one of the privileges of working and teaching with children. And so we can ourselves be stimulated and stimulate others to want to learn. Well, one of the points here is that when God gives wisdom, this wisdom is not just wisdom in how to find peace with God and reconciliation with God, although that's primary, that's first order. But when it comes then to living life, Monday through Friday, 365 days a year, there are all kinds of wisdom and all kinds of all the phases of life. And the point is that this is anything that is proper, anything that works, anything that is, God gives all kinds of wisdom. When we have wisdom to know how to fix a plumbing problem, that wisdom came from God. That understanding came from God. And when we have the wisdom to know how to design the heating system or to control the excess sound from ventilating fans, that wisdom comes from God. But He gives all kinds. Moving on, we have today a greater than Solomon has come. A greater than Solomon. In the person of Jesus Christ. And He's still here. Furthermore, we have the promise that He lives in our hearts. And He's promised that He'll guide us into all truth. And so we don't have to read this passage about Solomon and say, well, yes, that was Solomon. That was in his time. And, well, wouldn't it be wonderful if there could be some? Well, the point is that a greater than Solomon is here. And we have access, not only access to talk to Him, but He's promised that He will indwell us. And so we need to use the promises and the grace that God has given us, that Christ promises, for whatever the problem is. As we work with students, we want to encourage them and teach them based on the wisdom we have. We don't want to be like the man who bought the new saw. He sawed quite a bit of wood, and he went to the store one day, and he found out that they had, the store man told him that they have a new saw now. It's called a chainsaw. It has an engine on. If you buy this, you'll be able to saw much faster than what you did before. And so he bought one and took it home, and it really didn't work any better than the one he had before. In fact, it was heavier. He got himself worn out more quickly. And so the next time he got back to the shop, he asked him, well, now what about this saw? He said, it really isn't any faster. And they said, well, let's try it out. So he took it out back to a piece of wood, started it up, and the man said, what's that funny noise? Oh. Well, he found out then that this thing had an engine on that you could start, and it would saw faster with the engine. Now, I'm afraid that many of us, we come to know the Lord, and we know that the Lord brings us reconciliation with God, restores relationships, but do we realize that He wants to help us in every area of life when it comes to knowing how to relate to those children that don't get along, knowing how to answer questions, knowing how to get all the work done, knowing how to think through something we need to do? Here's a basic area of arriving at literacy, knowing that the presence of God and Jesus living in our hearts applies to my work on Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock in a very practical way. In a very practical way. Let's not know that we have Christ's presence, but not allow Him to use His power in every area of our lives. Jesus, when He was here, spake as one having authority, it says. As literate teachers, we can also speak with authority. Authority is a fascinating subject, fascinating thing. Authority has nothing to do with a person's size, age, sex. It's you can have people of any size, age, experience. Some have authority, some don't. And all true authority comes from Christ, through Christ. The disciples were asked, or it was asked about them, or about Jesus Himself, how does this man know letters, having never learned? And then also in Acts we read, when they perceived the boldness of Peter and John, then they took knowledge of them. They said, oh, that's right, these men were with Jesus. These men were with Jesus. And so, well, the point in these references is that with a relationship with Christ, we can have the authority and the understanding to do the work we need to do. It's possible to arrive there. And Jesus promised, "Come unto me if you labor and are heavy laden." If you teach a while, you'll know something about that part of the verse. And then he said, I will give you rest. Now, it's possible to be working very hard and yet resting, because he gives us the energy and the wisdom to do the work. Wisdom, Proverbs 8 says, actually cries out in the streets. And it's around us. It's around us. So let's not be blind to it. I'd like to say a few words about the concept of cultural literacy. Some of you may have seen a book by Ed Hirsch a few years ago, Cultural Literacy, What Every American Needs to Know. And then he came out with a dictionary of cultural literacy. Well, there's a sense in which this applies to us as teachers. He's referring to understanding the way of life of the people that you work with. I would like to take that a bit broader than just what every American needs to know. But as a teacher, when we work with people, we need to understand how the people think, what the common understandings are, how they look at things. And this would be especially true if you go to a different community to teach. Not everyone looks at things the same way. You need to understand a bit about the environment, about the times in which we live, about the background of the people, the way of life, their expression. Now, the point of this is that people have shared concepts, shared assumptions, shared terms that they use. And if we know something about them, it puts us in a position to communicate. And if we don't know this, why, we really don't have common ground in which to communicate and share with others. And so, as teachers, as we look at, well, what do I learn? What do I read? Well, one of the things you can do is simply learn a bit about a variety of things. Knowledge is a skill. He points out in the book, it takes a certain amount of knowledge in order to be able to, a certain amount of awareness, in order to be able to communicate, in order to be able to teach. This is a broad subject, but I would like to, related to that, to being literate, that is, to being aware of what's in the culture. This is something also that children, as they grow up, need to think about. What are the things that we should read about? Let me, in the little time we have left here, just share a few things that you might read, that you might study, as you look at developing your understanding and your skill. One of the things that we wonder as a teacher is when and how, as I begin teaching, can I find time to read, to learn? How can a busy person get anything else done than prepare the lessons or check the work or whatever? That's one of the struggles to maintain a literacy, to maintain that cutting edge, is that if we expect our children to be learners, we need to be learners. And if we arrive at the point where we are busy and have no time for a bit of reading, a bit of visiting, a bit of study on our own, that really is the attitude that we'll project to them. They may also have this feeling that, well, I'm very busy and I really don't have time to live, so to speak. And we need to remember that our feelings, our attitudes come over to the children. So one thing I suggest in when do I do a bit of reading, when do I do a bit of learning, and how do I do it? Well, remember the power of habit, the power of habit. It's amazing if you multiply out a bit of time, if you spend, if you would spend, there are 52 weeks in a year, and if you would spend 5 days a week, 15 minutes a day, or even 4 days a week, 15 minutes a day, that's an hour a week. If you can discipline yourself to spend 15 minutes a day doing something, just 4 days a week, that's 52 hours in a year. Now, can you get anything done in 52 hours? Significant? Think about that. What if you sit down to do something and you have 52 solid hours? So, if you're going to do a bit of reading, a bit of memory work, a bit of writing, a bit of study, whatever it is, to keep yourself fresh, to learn a bit more, set a regular time. Discipline yourself. As we do some of that reading, some of that study, whether it's current events, books, writing, or whatever, there are two things to keep in mind. One is to have a balance in what we read. To read some biography, to read some history, some current events, some variety of nonfiction about other people, other times, other places, some history. Get some balance in our reading. But also to have an area of interest, something that we like to study in depth. It's a good experience to be an authority here, to master something, some area that you're interested in, and spend some time studying that area. I might just suggest a few things here to either read or do. Especially if you're starting out in teaching, obviously we read the Bible, continue reading the Bible. One little book that will give you quite a bit of mileage in one small book is The Seven Laws of Teaching by John Milton Gregory. It's very easily understood but very profound because it's so easy and basic. There's also the Handbook of Creative Teaching, which is a handbook, but has quite a bit of ideas on about any kind of thing you face in working with children. And then there are several books that will talk about children's literature. One of those is Honey for a Child's Heart, which gives you chapters describing the different kinds of reading that's good for children and the values of different types. There are devotional books. There are always some issue books that you might want to read. One of the recent ones is called Endangered Minds. It talks about how children actually think differently today than they did some years ago, and how teachers who have been in the classroom for 10, 15 years can actually see a difference in the kinds of things that they can do with the children as opposed to what they could do 15 years ago. As you do some reading, remember books about the past, books about the world, read some poetry, read some hymns, some current events, stimulate yourself with a few brain teasers and puzzles, do some nature study, do some memory work. Memory work is powerful. It does more than just commit that material to memory. It's also very good for the mind and the person in other areas. And as you do all this, you have a story. You have a story to tell. You have a heart story. You have something to share with your students. The work of the teacher is to help the child to see his own birthright, to see what is really his. You have a birthright, and to help him to find it and to serve his God. And to do so, the teacher himself must know and do. It's possible to labor with God in the classroom and to see that the work that God does with us and through us and around us is very good, and to come to a certain sense in which that work is finished. And I'd like to say in closing, it is possible to be literate. It is not something that we have to be discouraged and say, I can never arrive, because it really is an ongoing relationship. It isn't a static destination that we are looking for. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonas. Teacher literacy is rooted in curiosity, and its source is truth as understood through our relationship with Christ.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.